Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast, a podcast about expanding your creative capacity. Each week, we interview inspiring creatives to help you grow your freelance career. All right, let's get into the episode. Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Andrea Mejia Madriz, and I'm a part of the artist marketing and partnerships team here at Closer and Closer. As always, I have my wonderful co-host here with me, Dave Arcade.
Thanks, Andrea. I'm Dave Arcade, an artist on the Closer and Closer roster, but enough about me because it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. He is a freelance designer specializing in custom lettering for illustration, logo types, and fonts. He's worked with clients such as Disney, Facebook, Nick Jr., Pepsi, Target, and USPS from Seattle, Washington. Please welcome Jonathan Ball. Welcome, friend.
Hello. Welcome, thanks friend. For having me.
Of course. Thank you for being here. I'm so excited to get into it today. And I think we'll just honestly dive right in because my first question is always a little bit of an introduction into who the artist is and kind of what their story is. So I want to start out by asking, you know, I didn't really know much about lettering until I started working at CNC. It is a pretty niche interest. So I wanted to ask how you found your love for lettering. How did you, you know, start off in your creative journey? And then how did you get to, you know, be the amazing letterer you are today?
Oh, well, thank you. It's kind of a meandering path. I didn't really know what lettering was growing up. I started off as a kid just always drawing in my spare time. And then when it came time to like do something with my life, I heard that, you know, people that design logos or do graphic design get paid money to draw things. So I thought, hey, that's a good idea. I'll try that. So I went to college for graphic design, studied that. And then I got an internship right out of college at a design agency that actually specialized in type. And it was actually in college and this agency that I kind of grew my love or fondness for type. It was something that I didn't really know existed. Like, you don't think about type being created. Just as a casual user, desktop fonts, you don't think that, hey, there's someone that actually designs this stuff on the other side, right? You just kind of take it for granted. So that kind of exposed me to a whole new world of type and type design, and by extension, lettering, which is a more kind of sculptural form of type design. I kind of took a weird path into it, but I really, really enjoy lettering because it's just, for me, it's a great combination of design and art together. Mm-hmm. You have something that's sort of objective-based, but also beautiful in a way. So it's kind of how I got involved in and started in lettering.
Oh, definitely beautiful. And then did you start freelancing? When did you kind of start freelancing? When did you stop working in an agency and decide, you know, I'm going to do this full time?
So I worked at an agency doing brand design and identity for a few years. And then I went to a smaller studio and did some more of that. I enjoyed branding, but I realized I wasn't passionate about it. It wasn't something I absolutely loved. It was enjoyable and the process was interesting. But what I really loved was drawing letters. So I decided, hey, I want to try to do this full time. I want to try to, you know, make my own path in life and not be a part of somebody else's dream, but have my own. So I decided to just try it out and jump ship and go the freelance route and try to do lettering full time. And that was about, I want to say 7 years ago at this point, maybe six. Yeah. I've been doing it for this time.
I'm kind of curious about the places that you've worked.
So I worked at, there's an agency here in Seattle, Gervin Design, which was really a very big agency back in the 90s. Not as huge anymore in scope and like actual like company size. They used to have like hundreds of employees, but now they're a much smaller agency, at least when I joined. So I worked there for a number of years, and it was my first gig, which was interesting because I was a junior designer. I didn't really know anything. I'm just applying like these principles that I learned in college to my designs. But I think the way that I approached everything, I actually got treated like a senior designer. So I got exposed to a lot of client facing things and a variety of projects. And I was given a lot more responsibility than I probably should have had, just because of the way I carried myself and the way I just the way I did my work. I just kind of perceived as a senior designer there, even though I really didn't know what I was doing.
You kind of you bleed like this this artist look. I don't know if you'll you'll find this insulting or it's a compliment for sure. But like right when I saw you, because I've never seen you before, I'm like, okay, this dude, like you look like a Nickelodeon like show creator. Like, oh yeah, I created Ren and Stimpy.
So well, thanks. I'll take that as a compliment. Yeah.
I'm sure I walked in the room and they're like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. Look at him.
Yeah. And I think that part of that was just trying to be intentional in everything I do. It was a wild ride for sure.
Right on.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's always kind of like how it goes, right? Like you just get thrown into a situation and like people decide, oh, this guy can totally do this. Even if you feel like, you know, I really have no idea what I'm doing. And it's honestly the best way to gain experience and learn. I feel like that's
sure. And the more you work too, the more you realize that nobody really knows what they're doing. They're all just trying to figure it out as they go.
Exactly.
And just having confidence in what you do is to help sell what you're doing.
100%. Yeah, the confidence bit is real.
Yeah.
Real for sure.
Have you guys ever had that confidence and you were asked to do something that was kind of out of your wheelhouse and then you totally failed?
No,
yeah, I haven't either. So that's why I'm asking. Yeah, I didn't think so.
I've never failed in my whole life.
No. Yeah. No, I've never, how can I put this? I've never failed at anything.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
Only
I have.
I think my biggest.
I'm like Kim Jong Un in that way. Always got like play golf, hole in one every time. Yeah. I should never compare myself to Kim Jong Un.
No, I don't think that's.
And I volunteered that.
You did it to yourself.
Yeah, I did. My wife says that all the time. Radiohead song. You do it to yourself. You do. Sorry. Let's get back on track. So this is something interesting about hand letters, and it makes me mad because I can't frickin' do what you do, and like I can draw complicated things. But I can't, anytime I've ever tried to like letter something just from thin air, like the X height and all of these rules come back to haunt me. I'm just like, dude, like you can't just draw letters. You can, but it's obvious your work is totally different than mine in that when you draw letters, it looks good and mine doesn't. So clear this up for me. Like not all illustrators can hand letter, but most hand letters can illustrate. Like, is there some truth to this? Because if you couldn't draw letters, if you can draw letters, you can draw other things. I see illustration in your work. do you like to illustrate, or are you just like, no, letters and that's it?
No, I absolutely love to draw. And I think it's another big challenge for me is trying to stick to one thing. I love lettering, but I also love just to draw. And I think to your point about not all letterers or not all illustrators being able to letter is probably because lettering is a very specific, it has a long history in language, and there's a lot of things to study and a lot of kind of unwritten rules about how letters should look. And so much of type is about optics. And I think that's actually one of the things that helps me is I think too often people, when they try to letter stuff, they get caught up in the mechanics of it. And I certainly did when I started, was trying to make sure everything was aligned and everything was like the exact same weight, like mathematically, when really type is more about optics and how it should look. So you really need to trust your eye when it comes to type. And more and more as I get more confident in my lettering ability, I've found that moving away from the guides is really helpful, actually. It's great for a starting point, but just stepping away and not having to worry so much about mathematical precision really helps something feel more like letters rather than something that was kind of made by a machine.
That is, I'm not just saying this because we have to fill airtime. That is freaking helpful
Yeah.
Like I do worry about that other stuff, and that's why I don't do it. But when I look at your work or like any hand letterer worth their salt, it's like, yeah, this visually is appealing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the most useful tip I've ever heard about hand lettering. Just like make sure it looks good.
Use your eyes. Yeah, it should be self-explanatory. Really, like,
I know. That's why I feel so dumb. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's the end goal, is to make sure it looks good. And then there's a few other things like just type in general, understanding the optics of how our eyes have a bias between horizontal and vertical forms. We'll perceive horizontal forms as being thicker than vertical forms, even if they're mathematically equal. So knowing that the horizontals should be a little bit thinner than the verticals, mm-hmm. to make it look optically even. Even that like will take you so far with lettering.
Yeah. I see. You think you're better than me. That's I see how this is going.
No.
Oh, that makes a ton of sense. I love stuff like that. It's like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think lettering is one of those things where you have to know like the rules and how to do it right before you're able to start like breaking them? Or do you think that it's like, I don't know, what do you think is like the most effective way to go about it? Like even right now, I'm just thinking like, it'd be so interesting for me to like try to make something like what you make, because it feels like it should be intuitive. I'm like, I look at letters all the time and I look at type all of the time. I should be able to do this. But I think, I mean, I suspect that it would come out looking actually like the most atrocious thing ever if I gave it a shot.
I think in general with any design discipline, it's always best to know the rules so you know how to break them intentionally and it doesn't look like an accident. Yeah. That's like the biggest thing. And anybody, really anybody can draw letters, but the big thing that kind of sets like professional letters apart is understanding how letter forms are constructed, how we have like thin and thick strokes, for example, like a thin upstroke and a thick downstroke, and knowing like which order those go in. That was something I did as a kid, but I didn't really understand. I remember like looking at like a printout of Times New Roman printed as a kid and just like looking at the letter forms and thinking, like, why is this one like thin and why is this one thick and the other one's thin? And like knowing that order, that's like another little thing that'll definitely set your work apart is just understanding how to construct the Roman alphabet.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that the thin to the thick, like if you're looking at an A and you got the thin, like if we're looking left side and thick right side, that is supposed to be, I got my drawing glove on. I got burned in a fire. skin graft. Sorry. So that's like thin upstroke and then thick downstroke?
Exactly. So that's kind of like where those sort of rules are come from. We expect letters to look a certain way because we've been writing them a certain way, right? We write up, you know, typically write from the baseline up for an A and then down to make that triangle. So the up is typically lighter pressure, so it's thinner, and then the downstroke is typically a little heavier because your hand's a little heavier handed, pun intended.
I just thought that was because it looked good. I was like, yeah, like combine the thin with the thick, it looks great. But that actually goes back to freaking writing it down first and then it becoming. Yeah. So are you trying to tell me that people used to write things before computers came along?
It's crazy. I know. I was blown away when I discovered it, but it's true.
Yeah. Never seen really it cool. before.
It's like the Jonathan Ball guy. He's got information.
If you're ever uncertain about like a letter form's construction, just think about like, how would I write this out? Like an M is another one you get caught up on a lot is you see like a leading stroke that's thick, you know, it's incorrect because you start with an M, you start at the bottom of the baseline, go up and then down and then up and then down. So you go thin, thick, thin, thick.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm gesturing because we're on a podcast. But
No, I'm learning stuff. This is good. This is good to know.
Good. I'm glad.
Well, Andrea is learning stuff. She's going to go on to become one of the greatest hand letterers of all time.
Oh, absolutely. Drew's going to put me on the roster and I'm going to put all of you out of a job. Truly.
That'd be awesome.
I'm going to take every single job. No, and something that I heard you say, sorry, at the beginning of your answer that I kind of wanted to touch base on, because like, I don't know, I'd never heard you say it before, is that you do like illustration, but like you just never do it because I think you said you want to keep, say your style, or you just want to stay focused. Are you like, you know, what, I guess you've been doing this for a while, but like, how have you found this level of focus? Cause like, you're right. Anytime you look at your work, it's all extremely focused. And like, you do the same thing, like you do lettering and that's your thing, and like typography. So like, why do you stay so focused? Why do you think it's so important to stay so focused? And then like, how do you do it? Like, how do you keep yourself from getting distracted with like other stuff that you love doing?
I'm glad to hear that, because I feel like I'm not very focused. So I'm glad it's coming off that way. No, I mean, for me, it's letters first and then illustration second. Illustration typically is a supplementary to lettering.
So I
try to keep the letters first, but I can't not draw cute characters. It's just kind of impossible.
I love Jonathan's cute characters. They're my favorite.
So you have a bunch of doodles and sketches that just to keep everything tight. You keep those out of the, keep them off your website and portfolio.
I try to, yeah. I definitely don't share as much as I should. And Andrea can attest to this.
Yeah. No, same with all my sick hand lettering. I don't, you know, since that's not what I do.
You don't.
Well, you're really great hand lettering.
Yeah.
So funny. Well, I kind of wanted to ask you more about creating fonts, I don't ever know the correct technical language for this stuff, so that's please right. Forgive me.
Yeah.
Because there's fonts and there's typefaces, right? I don't know what the difference is.
I thought they were the same, but I bet you Jonathan has a distinction.
Well, no, really, it's honestly the term fonts has become so ubiquitous, and it's just like the font is a font. Technically, the difference is like a typeface is the family as a whole, because like a font is like an individual weight of that's the true. Family or an individual style, and a typeface would be referring to the entire family.
Okay.
That's I really the that. Only difference. But like you say font, it's fine.
Okay.
I knew that. Typeface. I want everyone to know that I knew that. Okay.
yeah, Dave.
I was going like this. I was like, yep.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Dave knows.
But I know it's an intensive process to create typefaces or fonts. I'm sure both of them are extremely difficult. And I know you've done it before a few times. This is obviously a world that I know very little about, not super knowledgeable on it, but I kind of just wanted to hear like, you know, what your favorite parts of the process are and like why you decide to do something that is so challenging and like labor intensive and kind of nutty.
Yeah, it seems like a nightmare, right?
Yeah, it really I don't know if I'm just lazy, but it seems crazy.
It sort of is. Like, anybody can draw an alphabet. Anybody. Like, really, it is really pretty easy. And that when it comes to actually, like, drawing it into a program and then having that program render it correctly and actually, like, show it on screen, that's, like, a whole nother challenge. And it's really challenging. I would say, like, my favorite parts are definitely ideating and drawing that initial like character set and coming up with a cool idea for font.
I was gonna ask, how do you start? Where how do you decide like, okay, this is gonna, I'm gonna make this now? Like, where do you start that process?
Yeah, because what if the font sucks and you just don't know it until you like you get to Z and you're like, gosh dang it, this just doesn't even look good.
For me, it's always with anything that I design is start with sketching. It's like a pretty low effort investment to make into, any kind of thing you want to make. So I sketch out letters, trying to be as thorough as I can without being like too, overly detailed at that time, but like sketch out a general idea. And then what you're doing while you're sketching is trying to establish rules. What makes a font is, or a typeface. A typeface is that they all kind of share a DNA. Mm-hmm. And they have like a shared set of features. And that's the kind of thing that ties them all together. So what's important to remember is that you have to express this DNA across a variety of letter forms and shapes simultaneously. What's really challenging is trying to make them look similar, like they belong together in the same family, but also disambiguate enough to where you can actually read them as individual letter forms that they are.
Yeah. Crazy. And then wait, okay, this might also be a dumb question, but I just thought of it. Do you have like favorite letters to make? Like when you get to that letter, you're like, oh, this is going to be fun?
You know, I really like this. Yeah, it's such a type nerd question, right? favorite letter? I really I get it all the time, actually. I really like the letter R. It's got a fun, the leg of the R, the mm-hmm. stem that comes down at an angle. It can be treated in so many different ways. And there's a lot of opportunity to express personality in a typeface with an R, because it still reads pretty well. No matter what you really do to it, you can have it be a leg that just comes down, or you can actually have it be a tail that kind of flares out a little bit. Super fun. Least favorite for sure would be the S. Even I still struggle with S's. Yeah. So don't feel bad. Why? If you're still struggling with S's.
Draw an S right now. Like,
yeah, do right now.
draw a blocky S right now, and you'll see why it sucks.
No, yeah, actually, I am familiar.
It's really tough. It.
I'm familiar being a girl that grew up in the early 2000s when block letters were everything, and that was all that we ever did, is write block letters on paper.
I got a pro tip from Jill DeHaan on drawing S's, and she does like the thickness, like she knows how thick it's going to be, and then she does the middle angled part first, and then attaches the bottom and the top. And that like solved everything for me.
Oh, interesting.
Because you know, cool. Yeah,
Dave the expert.
Well, I'm a type expert. That's why we're talking to me.
that's why we have you on today.
So we're more qualified to interview.
Well, exactly. we wanted that to dawn on you slowly to break your confidence.
I'm slowly being broken down.
Yeah, it's a weird technique Drew's working on. He wants to break all the artist's spirits and then build them back up.
He's building a cult.
He says it's going to make us better artists.
He's starting his cult.
So I asked
Jen Hook. Just don't ask me to shave my head.
Yeah.
You're going to have to.
Wait, hey, sorry. I still want to hear the hardest parts of.
Nice.
Okay.
Look at our hair.
For the listeners that are not watching, they are showing off their hair at the moment.
Yeah, I took my hat off and just to show. Yeah, like he has a way bigger beard, but we have like kind of the.
Yeah. Straight same up. Hair. I still want to hear. I know you were going to. Sorry, I cut you off at one point with one of my silly questions, but I do want to hear what like the most challenging parts of creating a typeface also are, and how you motivate yourself to stick through those challenging parts. Because I can imagine once you're months into creating a typeface and you're like, this isn't working, I don't like this anymore, I would be the one to be like, okay, I'm done.
He already told us it's the S. Everything else is easy.
It's the S, yeah.
It's the only
once
hard
get past
part.
The S. I think, yeah, the most challenging part is the production aspect of it, is building out the rest of the character set. Because you don't really realize how many characters go into a font. Like a real actual commercial font. It's way beyond 52 characters, right? You got numbers and you got punctuation. And if you want to support other languages, you got to do all those characters. Mm. So character sets can be like 500 characters. And it's just like a single weight. And if you want to do multiple weights, it's insane. So like staying motivated through the actual production of all of the different glyphs in a font is pretty challenging. That's kind of the roughest part. And then trying to test it and make sure that everything works with everything else, because there's almost a mind-boggling amount of and letter pairs together. Mm-hmm. Even just taking like the 26 letters of the alphabet paired against each other, I want to say 670 something combinations.
Oh my goodness.
So like it quickly exponentially gets bigger and bigger. So trying to make sure you have a system.
You go through and like actually test what those combinations look like?
For the most part, yeah. The problematic pairs, like A and V and things that would naturally have a lot of open spacing if they were just mechanically spaced. Those kind of pairs you want to go through. But the nice thing about font development software is you can actually assign groups to glyphs, so you can actually make things behave in similar manners to other glyphs. So for example, if you know how an O behaves, you can have that rule or that logic apply to the right side of a D, for example, or a Q
Oh, cool.
that has a very similar letter form shape. So Luckily, I don't That's do so every single thing, but it's still pretty tedious work.
Yeah. And like, and then people just steal it. Like, I don't even know who made this. This is why, like, we were talking to Jen Hood about Future Fonts. Future Fonts?
Yeah.
That's the name of the company?
Yeah.
It was one of the first questions I had for her was, how good is the Nichrome font? I'll ask you the same question. How good is the Nichrome font? I'm looking at it right now. Do you know what the Nichrome font is? Are we about to have an awkward
Better
moment?
Question. I'm looking at it right now. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's so good.
I love it.
And so this person, so Future Fonts is cool because I paid 15, 20 bucks for this font when it was brand new. And then, you know how Future Fonts works, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, was that it's insulting? Early access. You're like, hey, no, that's like access, asking. Right?
Like video games.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And now, to get the finished font, because this person went all the way, it's like 350 bucks or something like that. We have an artist on the roster who has a font on Future Fonts that's not finished. I won't name names. Dave Coleman. It's funny. It's a funny website, because if you don't finish your font, they don't say anything. It's just like, hasn't been updated in 2 years. You're like, I'm not buying that.
Yeah, that's the only drawback. Similar to they've adopted like a video game model of early access where you pay for something that's in production, and there's with no guarantee that it'll be finished. But a tremendous payoff if it does get finished because you got in early, and it's really really cool. It's a really smart way to help motivate people who are designing fonts because it's a long, laborious process. It can take years. Like the latest font I released a month or two ago. It took 4 or 5 years to complete just because it was so daunting.
Holy smokes, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, well, like based on everything you said, that makes sense. Where do you sell your fonts? I want to look at them and maybe even buy them.
So if you go to jonathanballdesign.com, I have a listing there of all the fonts that are available for sale, but I also sell through FontSpring, MyFonts, and Creative Markets. And the latest release is a font called Alkaline. It's a mono-weight script in several styles, including a caps version. That one's available exclusively through Fort Foundry, but also it's available on Adobe Fonts. So if you open up any of your Adobe programs, you should be able to sync it up and use it right away.
Wow, this Alkaline font is dope. Looking at it right now.
Yeah. That was the one that took forever.
Yeah, I can see why. Okay, I'm going to get distracted looking at your fonts and wanting to buy. I love fonts. I love it, including type. I mean, if you take somebody else's font and they just extrude it, it's like blocky. It makes it seem like you made it, which I do all the time. just isometric extrusion, color it different colors. Put a stroke around it. It's like, I did this. Who's Jonathan Ball? speaking of being on the ball, I should get to, so this is something I was wondering about your work. Are we done talking how to make fonts? Andrea, good hell.
I'll allow it.
No.
I'll allow you guys to move on.
again, this is my second Nickelodeon comment, like attaching you to that world. I don't know if you're like, dude, I don't care about Nickelodeon, but... I actually spent a lot of time on that account at a design agency. And so, I don't even care. Like Nickelodeon, like I'm freaking pumping them up. Screw those guys. I'm just kidding. Nickelodeon. no, I had a,
I'm only mad that they stopped using balloon font for the logo.
Yeah. They also got rid of all their good shows.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I haven't watched it in ages. Since I was a kid, but have very fond memories of Nickelodeon as a kid. It was my childhood for sure.
They had a real chance like 5 years ago, and with like Breadwinners and Sanjay and Craig, and they're like, let's get rid of those shows, and they freaking. Anyway, don't get me started. Viacom. So, but your hand lettering is like super playful. It's kid friendly. I hope that's not insulting. Like, doesn't mean it's not edgy. It's just like it reminds me of Chris Lee's illustration work. Are you familiar with that guy? Like you guys should start a thing. What's up?
Oh, I'm just pointing to some of his work behind me. I have tons of stuff. I love Chris Lee. I was like, excuse me, sir. I love Chris. His work is amazing. Matt Coffenberg, them together is just a match made in heaven. Absolutely love his work. I think it's fair to say there's a slight juvenile quality to everything that I do. I don't know why. I don't like set it out too intentionally, but it just comes out that way.
I love it, man. I think it's great, and like it's so clear, you know, that it's not that this guy doesn't take anything seriously. It's just obviously like the kid inside you is alive and well. But if you hang out with me long enough, I will poison him and he'll die.
Okay. Noted. No.
I like to do, I have a similar thing, except I like to put really dark thing. I want to see how far you can push dark things with a cartoony style. Still working on it.
Love it.
Stay tuned.
So you have like this power. Every hand letter has this power to like adorn any phrase with this pro level craft. You can say whatever you want. And I think it's the, like you've chosen the correct lane. Like you have a definite style. You do it so well. But I am just curious, kind of going back to my comment a few seconds ago, do you ever just like write messed up stuff or draw something really jacked up and like you don't show anybody and you're like, yeah, that's not going to make the portfolio, but I feel a lot better.
Do you mean like a bad piece or like something I'm not proud of? Or do you mean like,
the your inner fury or something really gnarly just comes out and you're like, man, or a super bad word. I don't know if you have kids and maybe that's why you keep swearing out of it, but you know, maybe just like a big F word.
You know, I haven't actually, I haven't really thought too much about that. I should, there's nothing like preventing me from doing that. I try to keep it PG, although I don't really have any good hard reasoning to do that. I feel like maybe there's a broader audience out there, that way, but
this is stuff you wouldn't show anybody. Like the demons on the side, if you will. None of that.
No, it's all repressed. It's all way down. Never comes to the surface.
It's all buried as deep as it'll go.
You know, it was a long shot question. I was like, maybe we're going to get some dark stuff out of this guy. Just like, oh yeah. Like I draw people's, their intestines get ripped out. Like I have a whole series that's launching in a show in Paris.
Called the Severed Head series.
Yeah. But you know, no that's good.
I'm pretty PG. I don't know. I'm not really sure why. Cause I actually love horror, obviously.
Oh really?
And
oh,
yeah. I'm not like particularly fond of any kind of like one type of horror. I love it all. So, maybe that's how I get that release, is watching horror films.
Yeah. I can get on board with that. I watch horror films for the same reason. I feel after I'm done seeing people get mutilated, I'm like, you know what? I don't need to draw it.
Yeah, life's not that bad.
Yeah. What's your favorite horror film of recent years?
Of recent years?
Yeah.
That's or a tricky of all time. One.
Maybe both.
Recent years, all time.
Recent years, I would say one that still like sticks with me today is Hereditary.
That is also my
still
favorite.
Creeps me out to this day. From the past.
Uncool.
Yeah. I really like John Carpenter's work, particularly The Thing. That's like, it's like my quintessential movie. I love people trapped in a situation and trying to figure their way out of it. And then combine that with the practical effects and the horror aspect. It's just, it's beautiful.
Have you guys checked out Oats Studio or Oats Studios? It's Neil Blomkamp and the dude who did District 9, who can do like uncanny CG for real cheap.
Oh, yeah. I have seen some of that. Yeah. It's amazing work.
Yeah. Yeah. So you need to watch Oats Studios. They're just these little shorts by Neil Blomkamp, and they are all gnarly. They're like 10 minutes. One of them is like an alien race that took over Earth. One of them is a play on The Thing, but a billion times scarier. And it's like concentrated because it's like the middle of the movie, you know. the scariest part, and then he just goes to the next thing. It is real good. Oh, check it out on Netflix.
I gotta check it out.
There you go, Neil. Sure. There's your plug.
There's Neil's actually a sponsor of this podcast.
Yeah, he loves this podcast.
He loves it. He listens every week. No, yeah, I think that's so interesting that your work is so like the opposite of that interest. I don't know. I guess we're all multifaceted people and do a lot of different stuff, but you know, it's just cool to see like all the different things that you're into and that you probably get creative fuel from, but you just don't. It manifests in such a different way in your actual work.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like that you know what is marketable. There's definitely like, I think for somebody like us who draws like kind of from this childlike place, start to take that too seriously where it turns into actual horror stuff. And like, dude, what's with the intestines and like the guy holding him above his head in your latest piece? Like, that's not, there's a level of, taking yourself too seriously. I think even in that regard, you got to know your lane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Although okay. I was really hoping that you had some dark thing that you did on the side. It's like, hey, I smoke crack.
Sorry.
Okay? I smoke crack.
I hate to disappoint. Well, I do play D&D. Maybe that's
nice. You know,
Satanic Panic stuff. We're channeling Satan.
Are you the dungeon master, or are you just
could never. I have so much respect for DMs because they do so much, but I'm just not that kind of guy. I'm a player through and through.
I can't make this documentary, but I know it would be so good. Premise is friendship ending D&D games. Mm-hmm. Where there's like, dude, I like, you know, because you work on this character for so long, and then if the dungeon master pulls some bullshit and then you freaking die and you're like, dude, I shouldn't be dead, or I like, shouldn't have turned into like a giant ear. Like, this is your fault. Like, I could totally
see it. There, that happens all the time in games where you fall, you get a bad roll, right? Or there's just some sort of circumstance that's beyond anybody's control and you just kind of have to roll with it. And I've had characters die before. You know, you play this character for a year or two and then it dies and you're like, oh geez, I guess that's done.
Yeah,
Andre
wasn't taking this seriously, but now
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there's got to be like five stories out there. It's like Steve and Phil, best friends, friendship ending D&D game, tell us the story. It's like, well, Doug didn't freaking tell us that because he's a shitty dungeon master. Like, there's got to be.
There's something there. There's something there.
You wait. It's going to be a hit.
I can't wait. I'll market it for you.
Contact Neil. Like,
I mean, do you do that? Like, do you marketing?
Sometimes. On occasion.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's like a side hustle.
Yeah. All right.
So before we wrap up here, first of all, thank you so much for being here, Jonathan. But second of all,
of course,
I always like to wrap up with the same question. Again, we start them all the same. We finish them up the same. Let the people know where they can find you and your work.
Oh, easy. I thought it was going to be a hard saving the best for last.
I like to spook y'all.
What is the meaning of life?
Exactly.
Well, if you want to take a moment.
Yeah.
And answer that.
Think about it. The meaning of life is following me on social media. No.
Yeah. Thank you.
You
no. So yeah, you can find my work. JonathanBallDesign.com is my website, my portfolio. And that'll redirect you to my socials. But the others are Instagram is Ball of the Above, B-A-L-L of the Above. And Dribble, my name, Jonathan Ball.
Love it.
And Behance, Mark, yeah.
Love you know, as well.
Just in closing, like, guys, this Jonathan Ball is so freaking good at what he does. I'm on his website right now. Like, go check it out. Buy some fonts. Look at his logo types. And if you're an aspiring hand letterer, then I'm sure it will set you back a couple of years. But your work is incredible. Thank you for chatting with us and sharing some wisdom.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it was great being here. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to the Closer and Closer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to receive the latest episodes. You don't want to miss some of the incredible conversations that we have coming up. They'll be full of powerful insight to help you reach your full creative potential. To find out more about us, visit www.closerandcloser.co.